their dongs are great. Help me find a rookie pitcher with the mash of hero splitter. Chapman throws 100 plus. Who will be a total bust? Starters is legitimate. Or follow all the hosts on Twitter.
Happy Friday, everybody. We're getting closer to the start of the season. You know that because the World Baseball Classic is underway and Team USA gets started today. That's pretty awesome. And Heath, are you going today? Are you going this weekend?
I am going Sunday night. Looking forward to seeing the USA crush Canada.
I hope so.
So are you a classic guy, Adam?
What do you mean?
A World Baseball,
oh, World Baseball
Classic,
yeah.
Guy. Answer me this. How does something upon its initiation already a classic? That's something I've struggled for 9 years to figure out.
That's a pretty good question.
Don't you remember when ESPN used to do that with like college football games? It'd be an instant classic and they'd replay it on ESPN Classic the next week?
Well, that I could understand.
But it already happened.
Yeah, like I can understand that. Now, I'm into it. I haven't really been watching much, but I will be once USA starts playing. Sure, why not?
I don't know that I've seen an entire game combined in the history of the World Baseball Classic, so this will be more than doubling my exposure.
All right. Well, enjoy it, and should be fun at Marlins Park. I should get meaningful baseball at Marlins Park. Now, next week...
Wow.
Yeah, sorry.
I just hope the roof's open. If it's not, I'm never going back.
It should be. I would hope so. Sleepers and breakouts next week. So this week has been Bowl Prediction Week. Sleepers and breakouts next week, so send your sleepers and or your breakouts to fantasybaseball@cbsi.com and put sleepers or breakouts in the subject line. And we'll read a few on every show. So we're going to start with bold predictions. Today we're going to talk about some spring training storylines. Obviously the Sonny Gray injury, Matt Carpenter not swinging a bat yet, saves plus holds. I've gotten so many emails over the last week or so. I'm in a saves plus holds league, so let's talk about that. See if we have time for Scott's bounce back pictures, Heath's late whip help, excuse me, I should probably go a little slower here, and I want to talk about young hitters that I'd like
too
to draft.
Too slow,
all right. I'd like to talk about some young hitters I want to draft, and I'll tell you my logic behind it, not that it's so groundbreaking. Let's start with bold prediction of the day, number one, from Alex. Dear Cartman, Kyle, Stan, and Kenny, bold prediction, Trevor Story will stay healthy and lead the National League in home runs. By the way, I think he was on pace for 45 last year. P.S. from Alex. Heath, you are the man, but you are definitely Cartman.
Whoa.
I think that's fine.
Yeah, it's true.
I think Adam's probably Kenny.
I'm Kenny? I thought you were going to go with
I don't know who's Kyle and who's Stan.
How can Adam be Kenny when he talks the most?
Yeah, I thought you were going to go... the religious route and make me Kyle, but also, if anything, I'm Stan because I'm kind of like the leader, right?
The leader of what?
The pod, like I'm the post producer. All right, well.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, you can be the leader.
Trevor Story leads the National League in home runs. And yeah, he would have based on his pace last year. What do you think?
How bold is it, really, if he was already on pace to do it?
Well, you guys don't seem to... I feel like you don't really like Trevor Story that much. Am I wrong?
No, I just... The pace was unsustainable. I think he, after that initial drop-off at the end of April, beginning of May, he bounced back enough for me to think, okay, this is more or less for real, but it's kind of like Gary Sanchez, what we keep saying about Gary Sanchez. It's just, there was such a clear hot streak in there that you can't just translate the numbers out.
I wonder where he's going to hit in the order.
Well,
that matters to me because I could see a situation where he's hitting like sixth or seventh. And if he doesn't have that protection behind him, I won't like him as much. Now, if he hits second in front of Arenado or something, then obviously that helps a ton.
So let's look at a draft position here. Story is, it's almost like he's in a little tier of his own after the VR, Bogarts, Lindor group. And then, well, is that right? I mean,
He's kind of in their tier.
And then there's Segura. So yeah, what do you think? How do you value Trevor Story? When do you take him?
I tier him with Segura and VR, and also Aledmys Diaz, who I know his ADP is much, much lower. That's why I'm ending up with Aledmys Diaz a lot as my shortstop. Obviously, stolen base scarcity gives me a little more emphasis on Segura and VR than probably even Story and certainly Diaz. But in the leagues where that matters, you usually have extra middle infield spots to deal with, so it's not like I can't still draft the other, the non-stealers of that group, of that tier. So, I mean, those four together are a tier for me because they all performed like elite shortstops last year, but it was a big surprise for all four of them. So just from the perspective of, was it legit? I think they deserve to be a step behind the Xander Bogaerts, Francisco Lindor class.
Okay, and I'll say this about Story. Probably going to want him more in a roto league than a points league because he does strike out a ton. Bold prediction of the day number two is from Andrew in Muncie, Indiana. Marcus Simeon's BABIP normalizes, and he hits 270 with 28 home runs. Better counting stats to end the season as a top 10 shortstop. So Marcus Simeon, top 10 shortstop.
I've gone back and forth on Simeon a lot this preseason. Because, like, at first I kind of just ignored him. And then the more I started looking at it, I was thinking, you know, there was a lot of talk about him as a breakout last year, and he hit 27 home runs, still stole 10 bases, and if he had a decent BABIP, but I don't think there is a way for his BABIP to normalize and continue to hit for this type of power, because his profile didn't change that much last year. He had a 28% hard contact rate. That's not good at all, especially for somebody that's talking about hitting more than 20 home runs. He did hit more fly balls. That went up to 43%, but that's something that's going to hurt your BABIP. So that kind of makes sense that the BABIP went down. And then he's a guy that had never had a 10% home run to fly ball rate, and he was near 15% last year. So I could be sold on the idea that Marcus Simeon is an overlooked one-category contributor for power. Mm-hmm. But I can't get on board with the idea that his BABIP's going to normalize, he's going to hit 270, which he's never done, and he's going to keep the power.
Okay. Well, Simeon was actually the number 12 shortstop in fantasy last year. He's not being drafted anywhere near that, and he hit 238 with 27 home runs. I took him in the reserve rounds, so I don't know, around round like 25, around there, in our 12-team Roto League. And I don't think anyone's
a very good pick.
Yeah,
and as you would say about Andrew McCutchen, he was the number 12 shortstop playing 159 games.
Yeah, right. So not that good. But 27 home runs, 10 steals for Simeon last year. I want to remind everybody we're going to do a bracket challenge. I will make an announcement about it next week. You can join us. It's free. And whoever's winning after probably the Sweet 16 will get a spot in the podcast league. If there's a tie, I will pick one person. But, yeah, I want to get to 1,000 people. Last year we had over 700 between fantasy baseball and fantasy football podcasts. So I want to get to 1,000 this year. So please join our bracket challenge. Not a good day for my Miami Hurricanes, Heath's Kansas Jayhawks, and I'm not even sure if Scott's Georgia Bulldogs have a basketball team. But it wasn't a good day for us yesterday.
I disagree. It was actually a good day for the Jayhawks because they got to rest all weekend now and be ready for the NCAA tournament.
Okay, well, then it was a good day for Miami, too. Bold prediction of the day number three is from Yancey in Fort Myers. Corey Dickerson hits 30 home runs for America's favorite team and wildly improves upon his 2016 slash line by maintaining an above-league average on-base percentage, and Dickerson will slug over 500. C-Dick will also look painfully handsome while doing so. 30 C-Dick dongs, don't at me.
So does that mean he's getting traded to the Yankees? He'll do it for America's favorite team? Because that might happen if he plays at that stadium.
People hate the Yankees, Scott. Everybody loves the Royals.
No, I'm actually a little more... I've kind of warmed up to Corey Dickerson a little lately. Because at first I thought, looking at what happened to him peripherally last year, it was just a simple case of the difference in venue going from Coors Field ruining him, but his batted ball profile was vastly different. I mean, the fly ball rate was way up. The line drive rate was way, way down. So, I mean, the BABIP was on the low side, but it seems like if he gets his line drive rate back to where he's used to it being, he would be a high BABIP guy even in Tampa Bay. It's just I think his home runs would suffer. I think he would become a better overall player, but like that would probably mean 25 home runs is the ceiling for him, and he might not even break 20, so I'm definitely not going 30.
Almost everything I just said about Marcus Semien I could say about Corey Dickerson.
Well, I could also say that with a late pick in a roto league, a five outfielder roto league, like I'd love to have Corey Dickerson just in case.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's a good way, like put it in layman's terms. Like, you know, we're always talking about line drive percentages and BABIPs. Like,
he just didn't hit the ball as hard.
Yeah.
And he hit a lot more fly balls.
Right.
Yeah. Have a bad average.
But he apparently lost a lot of weight. Hopefully in better shape. Last 35 games of the season, Dickerson had an 886 OPS. He had 7 home runs, 13 doubles. We didn't think he was going to be this much of a victim of the change of scenery. I thought maybe the batting average, because he, you know, I think he hit really high batting average at home. But who knows?
My theory for Dickerson is that he overcompensated for the park change and tried to hit too many home runs, and that if he just gets back within himself, he'll be a pretty good player. Not the stud he was in Colorado, but pretty good.
Alrighty. Alright, so those are our bold predictions. We gotta talk about injuries, unfortunately. I also gotta tell you about something awesome. Blue Apron! And to put it in baseball terms, Blue Apron is batting 1,000 this week. I've made 2 of the 3 meals. Both have been incredible. I had a meatloaf on Monday. Last night, Moroccan chicken with brown rice, prunes, carrots, some honey, a little vinegar in there. A lot of flavor. I mean, that's what I love about Blue Apron. Awesome stuff. And you can have these great meals from Blue Apron too. In fact, you can have 3 free meals if you go to blueapron.com/fantasybaseball. blueapron.com/fantasybaseball. Get started now. Get 3 meals for free with free shipping. I love Blue Apron because it's affordable, less than $10 per person per meal. There's variety. I've tried so many different foods I've never had before. You can customize your recipes each week. They're easy to make and they get shipped right to your door. So check out this week's menu. Get your first 3 meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/fantasybaseball. That's blueapron.com/fantasybaseball. Blue Apron people, a better way to cook. Your news and notes. Andrew Benintendi could bat third for Boston. Interesting. I felt like there were a lot of lineup possibilities for Benintendi, but at the top, I don't care if it's second, if it's third or whatever. Be nice to have him at the top of the order. Yes?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, yes, it would. I mean, second, third doesn't really make a difference, but as long as he's one of them.
I'm really conflicted on what I want to happen with the Red Sox lineup.
Okay.
Like, they're going to hit Pedroia first, they've already announced, so I guess that doesn't really matter. I assume they're going to hit Betts second, or Bogarts.
Or Benintendi.
Or Benintendi, and then one of the other ones third, and one of the other ones fourth, and Hanram fifth.
Well, I think they want to split up their lefties and righties, so it would make sense.
That's
going to
be difficult to do because most of their righties are their best hitters.
Yeah, but Benintendi's a lefty, right?
Right, he can fill one of the first 5 spots as a lefty.
So I mean, if I were making the lineup, I think I would probably go Pedroia, Benintendi, Betts, Bogarts, and see what happens, and see if I can get Ortiz back to hit fifth.
I might hit Jackie Bradley ahead of Hanley.
Yeah, you could do that.
Whoa.
Well, all right, so we can speculate about the Red Sox lineup a little bit later. Sonny Gray won't pitch for 3 weeks due to a lat strain. He will not be ready for opening day. Is Sonny Gray still draftable, draft-worthy in a 12-team league?
Yeah, no, I would think so. He was basically like a mid-round pick before this, and now I think this just definitively pushes him to the late rounds. I'd still take him ahead of Jordan Zimmermann, who I think is undervalued, and I'm actually going to have him in Sleepers 2.0. I'd still take Gray ahead because I think it's a higher talent base he's working with. But obviously, can expect to have him in your DL spot the first month.
I dropped Gray yesterday to 76th, the starting pitcher, around the 240 range. And for me, that's well below Zimmermann. I don't know. I mean, I don't know that there's really that much difference between Zimmermann and Sonny Gray.
All right, Zimmerman.
And if one of them is going to be healthy to start the year and playing on a better team with a better defense, I would much rather have that one.
Zimmerman, I really didn't like last year. He was a guy I was avoiding because I owned Zimmerman in 2015, and he was very frustrating. He pitched for the Nationals and had, by his standards, a bad year. And the lineups in the AL East were so bad, and I kept saying, you know, Zimmerman's going to turn it around. Or the, I said the AL East, I don't know, but I meant the NL East. Zimmerman's going to turn it around, he's going to turn it around, and he was so pedestrian. And then last year, I mean, I think there's diminished velocity with him. I just think he's kind of, I don't know, I'm concerned that Jordan Zimmerman is kind of nearing the end of being good for fantasy, and he may have already hit that, and I understand he's going so late. That's probably worth the risk at this point.
That's the thing, and there were reasons for the diminished velocity. There were health reasons. So it's just, like, it's one thing to say Zimmerman's kind of pedestrian when he's the 25th pitcher being drafted. It's another when you can get him with your very last pick.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And, like, he's a rich man's Jason Hamill if he's healthy, which I guess maybe is underselling him a little, but... you know what I'm saying? What would be a better example? Maybe like a John Lackey? He's like a John Lackey if he's healthy.
So since Sonny Gray came into the league, he's got a 3.42 ERA with a 1.20 whip. In that same time frame, Jordan Zimmerman has a 3.44 with a 1.16. Kind of the same guy.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Like you, I know that you often look at like a guy's career, what he's done for this long. Personally, sometimes in this case, I think the last 2 years are more relevant for Zimmerman. We're seeing a worse product.
They both sucked last year.
Yeah, but Zimmerman, I think it's been 2 years where he's been really disappointing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, 2 years ago, you may be overstating it. Relative to where you drafted him, I guess he was disappointed, but he was still, like, he wasn't somebody you were benching in fantasy.
No.
But, I mean, Sonny Gray 2 years ago nearly won the AL Cy Young, so it's... Gray was clearly the better of the two years ago.
What happened to Sonny Gray? I just, what the heck
happened?
He got hurt?
It's a couple things. He got hurt. Yeah, I mean, he only threw 117 innings last year.
Yeah, but he was bad right from the jump.
And the Athletics, I wrote about this midseason. The A's defense went from one of the best in the league to one of the worst in the league. In fact, the worst in baseball last year.
He is a guy
that puts the ball in play over and over and over again.
But Simeon has good range at shortstop.
He's a baseball in errors?
Not last year. 2 years ago he did. 2 years ago when Sonny Gray was very good. He was among the leaders in errors. And now they're going with Plouffe at third base instead of Valencia. Valencia was just dreadful. I don't think Ryan Healy's supposed to be a very good defender, but it looks like Plouffe's going to play most regularly over there now. And I would think that, you know, shortstop and third base, that's where you need the strongest defenders for a ground ball pitcher. I feel like
I think up the middle is where.
I read something on Sonny Gray about how, look, his velocity was the same, his location was the same, his pitch selection was basically the same, but hitters were jumping all over him first pitch. And so he needs to become less predictable. That was how this person broke it down. I don't even remember where I found it, but I looked at some of the heat maps on FanGraphs, and it seemed to back it up. That there was a lot more hits. People were doing a lot better earlier in the count. So, hopefully that's an adjustment he makes whenever he gets healthy. That's kind of the hope because we all know what the upside is.
All right, let's do some more news and notes. Matt Carpenter, he played in the game yesterday, but he didn't swing. He basically was just up there fielding, and he had a bunt single. Carpenter, he's kind of downplaying it. He might start swinging in about a week. Jason Kipnis is DHing, still not ready to play second base due to his sore shoulder. Devin Travis, we talked about this, but I'll just bring it up again. Doesn't look like he's going to be ready for the start of the season. Oh, that's not determined yet. But Carpenter, Kipnis, Travis, by the way, it would be Ryan Goins and Darwin Barney, that could play second base in the absence of Travis. Is there anyone that you're starting to get worried about right now as we start drafting that won't be ready for opening day and injury concern?
Well, you worry about everybody who's not playing because of injury right now. I mean, it's only natural to worry. But ones who I'm actually, like, consciously avoiding them in drafts because of it, Scherzer's the only one, I think, for me.
Obviously Michael Brantley for me.
Yeah, well, okay, that's yeah.
And I've downgraded Sonny Gray a lot, and I downgraded Matt Carpenter just a very little bit.
I have Devin Travis, Jason Kipnis, and Matt Carpenter in our auction league. Oops. That's, you know, I don't know that I would have done that. I actually didn't know about Devin Travis's injury situation. I probably would have gone with Logan Forsythe over him instead.
That
but...
one does sound a little more serious. Yeah, well, you read he may not be ready for the start of the season. So, like, the Carpenter thing, like, they put him in a spring game yesterday. I don't think they would have done that if they really thought he wasn't going to be in their opening day lineup. Like, why? They're trying to make sure he gets fielding and all the other game stuff in other than swinging a bat. It sounds to me from the things I'm reading like it's just an abundance of caution. It may even be something Carpenter decided for himself because an oblique injury threw off an MVP caliber season for him, and he doesn't want to have some kind of subconscious change to his swing that would cause another oblique issue and would get him... He'd end up going backwards from where the progress he made in the off season. So I think it makes sense. And again, I want to remind people, Corey Seager missed most of spring training with a knee injury last year and was nearly the NL MVP as a rookie. So like there's being cautious and there's like being scared, I guess would be the bad version of that.
Don't be scared, people.
Yeah.
It's just fantasy baseball. Nothing
I'm a little
to be scared of. All right, last news item is that Albert Pujols is going to make his spring training debut today. I wonder at what point does Albert Pujols become a bargain? I know that we all think diminishing player, but he still was a top 10 or 11 first baseman last year. Getting worse every year at the position, but at what point does Albert Pujols become a bargain for you guys?
In Roto, I would say like the 12th or 13th, 14th round.
Okay.
Like when he and Napoli are the best first baseman left, I lean Pujols. I think that's the appropriate time to take him.
And where do you have a guy like Brandon Belt in that?
Behind
them.
Directly behind.
Okay.
Like in the same tier. I've got Pujols, Hosmer, Napoli, Belt all in the same tier.
Now, do you buy Belt's like pretty incredible on-base percentage last year? Because you could say in a points league or in an OBP league that maybe he should go ahead of those guys.
I buy that he's a guy who can walk a lot. It was a skill he showed during his minor league career, and I'd been waiting to see it in the majors. What I don't buy is that it really improved his stock even in that format that much, because the power threshold is so high. Just looking where he ranked in terms of points per game.
Well, he was the number 13. Brandon Belt was the number 13 first baseman in points leagues, number 19 in Roto. He had 275 with 17 home runs, but he also had 104 walks and was one of the best. He had 394 OBP and somehow only scored 77 runs.
Okay, that's interesting. Maybe just something fluky happened with the run total. But, I mean, it was usable production last year in that format, but he was behind Adam Duvall in head-to-head points per game. So
I would say, being Heath, that his career on-base percentage is .359. Three of the six years that he's played, he's been between .355 and .360. That's probably where I'd expect him to be.
We're going to get to some emails in a bit. We're going to talk about saves plus holds, but I want to talk about something. You know, I was looking at the auction that we keep referencing and the team that I just drafted. And I looked at it and I said, you know, I wish I had more young hitters who are about to break out. I've got Benintendi, but I don't know that I really put it because he's so young and so unproven. I got Jake Lamb. I got Gurriel. But, baseball, the best hitters are going to be pretty young now. And I feel like I definitely, especially if you're a guy who or a girl who does multiple fantasy drafts, like I want to put these young players on my team. So the guys I'm talking about, I'm looking at an ADP and just guys that I personally think, I want to know what you guys think. I think that they have a chance to sort of defy the statistical evidence that we have for them now. And yeah, this is sort of a breakouts discussion, but emerge as top 15 hitters, or as we get further down the list, not that good, but but, you know, way outperformed their draft value. Xander Bogaerts in round three. I know, Scott, you have some BABIP concerns, you have batting average concerns. I think Bogaerts, though, has just shown us that he's gotten better every year, and he's so young. He's like 23 or 24. He could still have a monster season.
Yeah, I don't think those are mutually exclusive ideas. Like, I just think he's among the early shortstops. He might be the highest variance of them.
Okay. The thing that impresses me about Bogaerts that I did not buy into at all last year was that he has kind of told us 2 years in a row what he was going to do as far as his approach, and then he's executed it. And so that gives me a little bit more confidence, especially if you're telling me he's the cleanup hitter and that he may just turn the power on a little bit this year and sacrifice a little bit of average, but maybe be one of the most powerful shortstops.
And he said he wants to steal 20 bases, right, Bogaerts?
Did he say that?
I'm pretty sure
he did. I think I did see something about him wanting to run more. I don't know if he set a number on it.
If he wants to steal 20, that's all you have to do to steal 20.
Okay, so that's one guy. I'm just going to go through ADP. And if, well, you know what? Let's pause here. Bogaerts, by the way, did say he wants to steal at least 20 bases this year. Do you agree with the premise that when you look at your final roster, you'd like for it to have some young guys who are ready to take the next step in their careers?
Absolutely.
I don't know that I feel that way. I mean, obviously, if it's a keeper league, that changes things. But just a regular run-of-the-mill single-season league, I mean, if I don't care how old he is, as long as he's productive.
No, I agree. I definitely agree. I'm not going to pass up a better player. I'm not going to pass up Matt Carpenter for Michael Franco, but, you know, I do want to have Michael Franco, and I was just looking at the results
You're saying you want players who are going to exceed the production of their cost.
Well, of course.
And typically younger players have more room to do that. And that's not necessarily wrong, but I think a lot of times players who aren't young slip further than they should, like an Aledmys Diaz, for instance. I guess you could call him young, maybe, but it's not like he's, you know, somebody who hasn't reached his physical prime yet. I don't know.
No, look, yes, I'm basically saying that obviously we all want to draft players that are going to outperform their draft value. You don't have to be young to do that, but I just think back to last year, and I think about the landscape of the game and how, you know, there are a lot of strikeouts, but there are also more home runs, more power, and I just think now is the time where young hitters are kind of going to own the game. And last year, it was Mookie Betts, and George Springer was a fourth-round pick in our podcast league, and Rougned Odor, I know, you know, because of the walk-to-strike-out ratio, wasn't great, but he hit the most home runs for a second baseman of his age ever. So, yeah, these are the types of guys I'm targeting. Odor, unfortunately, is going in round four, and I haven't taken him. He's been a little bit too pricey for me.
Yeah, I think the problem with Odor is he definitely fits into this category of young hitters that could take the next step, but it's kind of priced into where you're drafting him.
Yeah,
like you're drafting him as if he's going to take the next step, or he's already taken it.
So Christian Yelich is an interesting guy, because I had basically been like, I'm not going to draft Christian Yelich. I don't get all the Christian Yelich hype. I don't want to be too swayed by a quote, but just reading Don Mattingly talking about Christian Yelich, how they expect maybe more power and more batting average, and now he is a star. It opened my eyes a little bit and just made me think he's still pretty young, Christian Yelich, and maybe there's more to it, and maybe I'm kind of sleeping on Yelich. Nobody else is. I know he's going to get drafted in the fifth round in all my drafts, but maybe I should be in on that. I don't know.
Yeah, I saw a quote from Christian Yelich. I don't remember it verbatim, but it was something to the effect of he's not interested in changing his swing plane. And like the issue for him is he needs to hit more fly balls to hit as many home runs or obviously to hit more home runs than he did last year. So I don't know.
It's such we have had a huge debate, or I basically did with Chris yesterday about the JD Martinez article on FanGraphs and the importance of lifting the ball and the new revolution of hitting the ball in the air. And I kind of scoffed at a lot of it, but then I read something the Pirates were talking about. There was a piece, I can't remember where it was, said your OPS is in the air, and talking about the importance of hitting the ball in the air. But then it talked about Gregory Polanco, who apparently for the first 2 years of his career was really focusing on trying to lift the ball, and changing his swing plane and continued to roll over and pop out too often. So last year he just tried to hit low line drives and he hit the most home runs he's ever hit in his career. So I do think that for many powerful hitters, you've got to change your swing plane to hit more home runs. Makes a lot of sense. I also think that for some other guys, sticking with the approach that Yelich has can still lead to some decent home run numbers.
Well, here's another point about Yelich. You know, he only stole 9 bases last year in 155 games, but he was a 20-steal guy in 2014 in 144 games. He stole 21 bags. And in 2015, he stole 16 bases in 126 games. So you've got a 21 homer season from him. You've got a 21 steal season from him. They did not happen at the same time. But I do like to see in a guy, Christian Yelich, who's 4 years into the league and he is 25 years old, that he's got 2020 potential, right? You have to say that about him. He's done it separately, but maybe he could do it together. Or you just don't buy the home runs. You don't buy the home runs.
No, potential. He has that potential. I would take the under on both the home runs and the stolen bases.
All right. Obviously, we know how I feel about Gregory Polanco. He's going in round 6. Alex Bregman in round 8 is some of my favorite average draft position there. I don't think it's realistic. I think you're probably looking more like round 6 for Alex Bregman. But this is definitely somebody I want on my team. And I was just thinking, it only takes 5 appearances in the season to gain shortstop eligibility. Bregman played shortstop in the minors. It could happen. It could not happen, but there's a chance.
He's a better shortstop than Carlos Correa is,
right,
defensively. Like, in the long run, I think that's how the Astros are going to align it. They just may not be ready to do that yet.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, I think Bregman has a better chance than off the top of my head, any third baseman other than Manny Machado of gaining shortstop eligibility, which would be nice. Do you guys agree Bregman, if you can get him in the 8th round, is just like money in the bank?
I think it's right about where he should be taken.
I've drafted him earlier than that. I've also passed him up. Like, even though I had him ranked, I'd take players I ranked behind him just because I didn't want to fill third base that early, or because I had already taken a third baseman in the first round and didn't want Bregman for my utility spot. So it kind of depends on need how enthusiastic I am about him, but like, he had ridiculous production in the minors last year. Like, it was the most impressive statistical minor league season I think I'd seen since Bryant, and in some ways it was even more impressive than that.
So
Why
aren't we going crazy over Alex Bregman? Like, I feel like this could be
because minor league numbers aren't everything.
Yeah, but his major league numbers, look, his first 10 games Alex Bregman was 2 for 38, and then last 39 games he batted .313 with a .577 slugging percentage, a .931 OPS. And he stole 20 bases in 30 attempts in 146 games in the minors. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe
I don't want to talk down Bregman because all that isn't lost on me. But it's like, if you're like, it's no comparison to Bryant, because Bryant was drafted to do exactly what he did. And Bregman last year was surprising how powerful he was in the minors. That's something he can sustain in the majors. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion like it was with Bryant.
All right. So where are you guys on the Bregman versus Beltre thing?
Bregman.
Yes, Bregman.
Where are you on Bregman versus Todd Frazier, who's actually being drafted ahead of him?
Bregman easily.
Yeah, that one shouldn't be easily. Except that Bregman, if it's easily, it should be Bregman easily ahead of Frazier. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, Beltre and Frazier both going well ahead of Bregman in average draft position. All right, other guys I had, I don't know that you're going to disagree with too many of them. I like Jose Ramirez in round 11, especially in Roto. You want to get some batting average and some steals.
I don't know that that there's especially to it. He strikes out so infrequently. I mean, I think he's underrated in both formats.
Okay, great. And Miguel Sano, Addison Russell, Ledmus Diaz, Andrew Benintendi I put on there. Michael Franco. Between Sano and Franco, I'd really like to get And then Jake Lamb a couple rounds later. These are third basemen that could definitely take the jump. Byron Buxton round 15. You guys have any other names of like sort of the kind of lottery ticket players that you've got that you could see just having monster seasons? Fire away.
Jack Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
Yasiel Puig.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going top of mind here. Yeah. Addison Russell, I mean. I would guess he qualifies here. Oh, you mentioned him.
I did.
I think Kyle Schwarber
breezed through him. Schwarber, okay.
Definitely. I guess you have to say Javier Baez. I wrinkle my lip when I say it.
Because you don't really want to draft him where he's going, but it's not outside the realm of possibility that he has the kind of season we're talking about. And Keon Broxton, I think, could be a monster. And he's going late.
I don't think this guy could be a monster, but I think he could be a very late guy that has a breakout type year as Tim Anderson.
What about
hates his guts.
What about, because he doesn't walk. What about Domingo Santana? Does he have any late sleeper appeal? I don't know that he's going to have a huge year, but yeah. Does he?
What? I think there's a decent chance that one, maybe even two, of the Brewers outfielders proves to be a huge value. We just have different opinions of which one or two it's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Santana does have a lot of power. He kind of reminds me of Willie Mopena, which, if you don't know who Willie Mopena is, that's kind of the point.
I know who Willie Mopena is. Finally got one. How about Hernan Perez? That's another guy. Like, I don't think he's got massive breakout potential or anything. This is kind of a different conversation. But I talked about this, I don't know, earlier this week or last week. They said he can play seven positions, Hernan Perez, for Milwaukee. I don't know why we're spending, this is like the Milwaukee Brewers hour, but.
Well, that's the thing. Bad teams have lots of breakout opportunities.
That's a good point. And I think he's got a lot of playing time opportunity because who's to say that all the guys Perez is playing behind are going to do well? Ryan Braun plays 140 games a year. I think, it's a roto pick for steals, but Perez goes super late. Might want to take him.
Yeah, I just drafted him recently in a draft-only league that I was doing and got him very late as a corner infielder.
My biggest there's two reasons I'm a little reluctant with Hernan Perez, although I do think he'll play a lot compared to most bench players. At some point, the Brewers are going to have to call up Lewis Brinson, their top prospect, an outfielder. And, maybe they trade Ryan Braun first. Maybe Santana or Broxton slumps his way out of the lineup first. But maybe not. Maybe they're already trying to work in four outfielders and then Perez. And then there's also Scooter Gennett there, who they'll have to find at bats for if they don't trade him. So it's crowded.
They don't have. Why do they have to find at bats for Scooter Gennett?
His name's Scooter, Adam.
Well, I mean, he was a starter, and I think they want to try and redeem something for him in a trade.
Okay.
He's a rich man's Jace Peterson.
That's not a bad point. I mean, I don't think he's very good. He is kind of a rich man's Jace Peterson.
Well, you should be playing your fantasy baseball on CBS Sports. I've been telling you about it. You've got plenty of time to sign up. No matter how you play, there's a game style for you. You can start a league with custom rules. You can compete for cash in a prize league. You can create or join a free league with standard scoring. With CBS Sports, you're going to get exclusive roster tools, great projections, just like so many great things on CBS. I think you're really going to enjoy playing there. You got the analysis from Scott, Heath, and Chris as well. You got video content, written articles, planners to help you set your lineup every week. Start playing today at cbssports.com/baseball, cbssports.com/baseball. Do you guys play in any saves plus holds leagues?
No.
I was in one last year. The rules discussion has not happened yet, so I'm not sure if that will continue. I'm hopeful it doesn't.
It's fairly popular. We're getting a lot of holds questions, and it's totally different if you play in a saves plus holds. Not totally different, but fairly different if you play in a saves plus holds league or a holds league. The most important thing to keep in mind is that the league leaders in saves are going to have more saves than the league's leaders in holds will have holds. Saves are, I guess, more plentiful for the elite.
More predictable, for sure, which makes them more plentiful.
And, like, each of the last 2 years, there has been one pitcher that's had 40 or more holds. Last year, Tony Watson had 40. Or 2015, Tony Watson had 41. Last year, Addison Reed had 40. Nobody else in that span has had more than 34, where obviously you're going to get several relievers or several closers with more than 40 saves. So if you play in a saves plus holds league, that probably means you don't want to just take setup men. You probably want some closers there. But also, I imagine that holds are fairly easy to get. I really have no interest in playing in this league. I apologize, but what can we tell the people who are in the holds plus saves leagues?
My thought is that as a rule, and this isn't always the case, but as a rule, people are going to overvalue holds in these types of leagues because they're making an adjustment to a new type of rule, and they don't realize how unpredictable or maybe even low in numbers holds generally are. I think it does increase the value of guys like Andrew Miller and Betances, Nate Jones, guys that are really good setup men that we also think can get saves. But I'm not making a specific effort to draft a lot of guys as holds only.
Yeah, there's not really a long list of pitchers that you can identify going into the season. Oh, this is going to be a great holds guy. There will be a lot of pretty good holds guys. And like for to kind of like Kyle Bearclaw was tied for second in holds last year with 29. So the second place holds guy had 29. The 28th best holds guy had 20. So a difference of 9 among those 27. And then the 59th best holds guy had 15. So a difference from 29 number 2 and 59 15, like with a lot of alike options in between.
Right.
It's just there's so many of them that do basically the same thing.
So don't chase holds, chase ratios. Chase good pitchers with good ERAs, a good whip, and some strikeout potential like a Nate Jones and Miller and all that. But I also think when you look at the numbers, you can expect most holds guys to be in the upper 20s, like the good ones that you're going to be rostering. That's my takeaway. So I think in a if your category is saves plus holds and not two separate categories for each, I think there's no reason why you wouldn't favor a good setup man like a Nate Jones, forgetting the fact that he could become the closer. Let's just say he's a setup man all year. You should take him over like Neftali Feliz, who's going to get saves. Like, just take the better pitcher. Because Feliz is probably not going to get more than 30, I would guess. You certainly would take Nate Jones over Brandon Kinsler.
Yes. Yeah, I'm just not sure. Your point is a valid one. I'm just not sure the line for me is right at Feliz. It might be a little lower than that.
I think I would move Jones ahead of Feliz because I feel like there's a very good chance he's getting saves the entire second half.
All right.
But Adam said to take that out.
The point, I mean, look, let's not haggle over who the player is, whether it's Feliz or Kinsler or Brandon Maurer or something like that. It's if you have a guy who you don't think is going to get more than 30 saves, you're better off taking a holds guy who's just a better pitcher to help your ratios. Fair?
Yes.
Okay. That's in a saves plus holds league where they're the same category, not a saves league that also has a holds category. All right, let's hear from the listeners. Two quick emails and a tweet. Chris from Central Pennsylvania. Am I the only one that thinks Cole Hamels is going to start declining this year?
I don't think so. I think his main issue last year was just the walk rate was unusually high. And strikeouts were pretty normal. Everything else looked pretty normal. It just seemed like kind of a fluky thing, like with Jake Arrieta. And I'm not worried about some kind of trend starting here.
Scott, I would love to trade Cole Hamels to you for Chris Archer. Can we do that?
No, I like Chris Archer more.
Yeah, but so do I.
Okay.
I would do that if I had Chris Archer.
You would trade Archer for Hamels?
I do not have Chris Archer, so it's going to be difficult to make that deal.
I mean, Hamels and something else, it's possible. But knowing Adam Azer,
yeah. All right, I'll give you
probably not possible.
I'll give you Hamels and Carlos Santana. You give me, let me see here. Let's get Scott White's team up here.
What league is this in?
The Auction League, Memorial.
I'm going to swoop in and make a better offer than either of you can make.
Well, I'm going to need a first baseman back if I give you Santana. So you give me Goldschmidt and Archer, and I'll give you Hamels and Santana. What do you say?
That's like insulting. An Adam Azer offer.
That's insulting. Let's do a worse first baseman. Daniel Murphy and Archer for Santana.
I'm going to pass.
Will
Hard
Myers.
Pass on that.
All right, fine.
No.
So you really just don't want Cole Hamels?
Not really, no. I want a better pitcher.
Okay. Well, I know you really like Carlos Martinez.
Yeah, if I'm worried about whip, which I am with Cole Hamels, I'm not going to trade for Carlos Martinez.
Well, the offer is on the table.
Okay, thank you. It's very nice of you. Another email. Another email from Joel from Denver. Hey, Omar, Stringer, Avon, and Marlo. That would be The Wire, I believe. Our league just went to left field, center field, right field roster instead of simply three outfielders. How does that change your draft strategy? Is position scarcity a thing in the outfield?
I honestly don't know. I know it used to be center field, but I think there's a lot better hitters there now than there used to be. I would guess it's pretty balanced. Maybe left field is the weakest.
That's
actually
what I was thinking. Yeah, I was thinking left's probably the weakest. Yeah.
But no, I don't really know. I've never played in this league before. This kind of league.
I don't know how the position eligibility works, but Christian Yelich is going to move to center, so he'll be dual eligible in theory. Same with Starling Marte and Andrew McCutchen. They'll have dual eligibility. Gregory Polanco will have eligibility at both corner outfields because he's moving. I would like to see the left field pool. I wonder if Cespedes would have dual eligibility, and he might be, he's going to play left field for them, right?
Yeah.
So he might be one of the better left fielders, but it is hard to say off the top of my head. And then I wonder, like, what happens to, like, DH players like Nelson Cruz, who's, well, he's probably just got, what, right field eligibility? I really don't know.
Oh, you're saying if, it would be an interesting if, like, a player got 20 games at DH, let's say, and then 11 at each of the three outfield spots, you know? So, yeah. Like, the combined outfield appearances should make him outfield eligible, but he didn't have any one of the
right.
three more than DH, so yeah, that'd be interesting.
All right. Sorry we couldn't be more helpful there. and a tweet from Liberal in Cincy, getting political on fantasy baseball today. a few words about Pablo Sandoval and Jose Reyes, please. No one is talking about or drafting Sandoval and Reyes. I think they both have great value.
I am drafting Reyes. I have done it in at least one league, maybe two that I'm actually playing out. I'm somewhat excited about him as a late-round corner infield possibility.
Sure.
With the potential of gaining shortstop and outfield.
The problem with Sandoval is he's going to be much better in points if he's good at all, and he won't be good enough to matter on a points roster. So he's AL only.
The problem with both of them is that third base is so deep. But I'm hoping Reyes gets shortstop eligibility, you know, within a few months.
Yeah.
Cabrera misses a few games and maybe they
I mean, it's kind of disarming, like, when you look at what he actually did last year, because he only hit .267, .326 on base percentage, .443 slug. Nothing that seems crazy. He was better than Kyle Seager, Matt Carpenter, Alex Bregman, Justin Turner, Evan Longoria, Todd Frazier, all of them on
really?
A per-game basis last year. Yeah.
Because of steals? How many steals for Reyes?
Because of steals and, I mean, just a diverse extra-base hits, a lot of doubles, a lot of triples. He doesn't strike out a ton. And he had 9 steals and 255 at-bats. So, you know, a 20-steal guy, maybe. It was about a 15-homer pace, which might be a little high, but a lot of doubles, a lot of triples, decent walk rate.
I am really
good strikeout rate.
Disappointed you didn't read the second half of Joel from Denver's email. I thought that was maybe the best.
Oh, part yeah. You're right. I'm sorry. The Mount Rushmore of 80s songs episode was a classic. How about 80s movies? I'd like to throw out there Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Ghostbusters, The Empire Strikes Back, and The Princess Bride.
Like, Back to the Future is the best 80s movie.
I don't think
right?
you can even begin the discussion without E.T.
Well, first of all, I think The Princess Bride is immediately taken off. Like, the other three have a very strong case. Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Ghostbusters, and The Empire Strikes Back.
I'm with Scott that E.T. and Back to the Future are on the list. Everything else can fight to be on the list.
Really?
Empire
like,
Strikes Back is on.
Empire, yeah, okay, Empire
That's
Strikes
three.
Back.
Like, it has to be good and also have a distinctly 80s feel to it, because Back to the Future, I mean, it's set in 1980s, but it's pretty timeless. Like, it doesn't feel like it's aged
That's,
much
yeah.
at all.
No, it has to be good, and
I think everybody agrees that Back to the Future's in.
No, but I'm saying maybe
I don't
it
agree.
Shouldn't be in, because it's not representative of the 80s specifically. It doesn't feel 80s.
No, like, I don't think that needs to be the case. But, okay. like, for example, you could put the Goonies ahead of Back to the Future if that were the criteria. Like, the Goonies is so 80s.
I would like to submit Red Dawn.
Goonies is so 80s. The most 80s movie that's, you know, not horrible is Weekend at Bernie's, probably, right?
Karate Kid is extremely 80s. Oh, this is so hard.
Gremlins?
This is so... Well, you don't think the Karate Kid is 80s?
Oh, totally.
It is, but I think Gremlins is a better movie than the Karate Kid.
I don't
know
that. And
it's a Christmas movie.
And I don't know that it's as 80s. As strong of an 80s feel either.
You know, it's like Rocky IV. Rocky IV is extremely cheesy in 80s.
Yeah.
When did Die Hard come out? Die Hard is an 80s movie, right?
87, I want to say.
88. Like, Die Hard is, it started a genre, I think. You know?
It was ahead of its time. But it feels dated when you watch it. Like, Back to the Future is amazing to me because it looks like it could have been made last year.
I do not think Die Hard feels dated. I don't think so at all. This is really hard. My goodness. I'm sure we're missing.
We're going to need a bigger mountain.
There's got to be a.
Major League was in the 80s.
Major League, yeah. There's got to be a huge 80s classic movie that we're forgetting. Best movies of the 80s. All right, we'll come back to that. Well, as usual, I've kind of run out of time, but.
Breakfast Club, 16 Candles, all
that
John
crap.
Hughes movies. Like, those are the 80s.
But those
right?
movies kind of suck. Like, The Breakfast Club is ridiculous.
The Breakfast Club's better than Ghostbusters.
It's ridiculous,
no, it's not.
Like you'd expect an 80s movie to be, but it's not a bad movie.
The scene where they're all crying, Emilio Estevez is talking about like the sort of mean thing he did to someone, and he just starts hysterically crying. It's like it's so lame.
It was the 80s were an overly emotional time.
Yeah, exactly.
And music too. I mean, the style people sing with in the 80s is just so over the top emotional. Like you think of the Growing Pains theme song, like, oh my gosh. What is happening to you?
I love that song. So how about like the Terminator, Raging Bull, Top Gun, Caddyshack, Platoon.
Caddyshack was the 80s? It feels so 70s.
1980 it was. Platoon.
The first couple years of a new decade are basically
they don't count.
Decade.
They don't count. I hate Platoon, by the way. I think it's one of the worst best pictures. Is that one best picture? I think it's one of the worst.
I also don't
like Full Metal Jacket very much. Footloose couldn't be more 80s. I bet Rain Man was an 80s movie, right? That's a great one.
Yeah, and it feels 80s.
All right, we can move on to baseball. So of your bounce back pitchers, Scott, Chris Archer, Zach Greinke, Garrett Cole, these were aces that disappointed us. Archer, Greinke, Cole, Felix Hernandez, Sonny Gray, Adam Wainwright, Jordan Zimmermann. Who are you most confident in bouncing back this year?
I am most confident in Chris Archer bouncing back because I feel like he basically did the last couple months. It's just he had a 9-19 record or whatever it was, so people, it kind of flew under the radar.
And Heath, who are you most confident in? Greinke, Archer, Garrett Cole, Sonny Gray, etc. Who are you most confident in bouncing back?
I would say Archer followed closely by Garrett Cole.
Ahead of Greinke.
I was more excited about Greinke before his last start. And I'm not saying I'm down on Greinke, but I would like to see him break 90 miles an hour before I get too excited about his bounce back.
It's worth noting, because I actually wrote about Greinke that last spring start this morning. He did top out at 89.5 in his second spring start. His first spring start, he was up at 91. So I think he didn't throw nearly as much as most pitchers do prior to pitching in spring games. I think that might have something to do with it. But it's clearly something to keep an eye on, especially since he's coming off a hard-to-understand bad year.
Right. He totally baffles me, confuses me, Zach Greinke, and I'm not sure I'm going to have any Zach Greinke, and maybe I'm going to regret that. But
I find myself skipping him a lot and taking Dallas Keuchel instead.
Yes. Right. I feel the same way. Was Keuchel on your list in this article?
Yes, he was.
And Heath, you're not really feeling Keuchel like Scott and I are, right?
I don't feel like he has the... And this is going to just be ridiculous to both of you, probably. I don't feel like he has the upside that he has shown. And I don't think he ever reaches that level again. And I have a really hard time with... He's now got 4 years in the majors. Two of them are awful. Two of them are good. I don't know why I would be more likely to, like, we're not even saying last year was the real Keuchel. We're saying one of the 2 years in the middle was the real Keuchel.
I think you have to say he had Keuchel had two good seasons. If you want to make the case for Keuchel, if you don't, then you don't have to say anything. But if you do, Keuchel had two good seasons, and then he himself said he was not right physically with his shoulder in spring training. He tried to push through it, and he failed in doing so. So
I'm not real down on him. I just think he belongs more in like the, and again, I'm lower on these guys, I guess, but the Aaron Sanchez, somewhere between Aaron Sanchez and Jay Happ.
Yeah. All right. I looked at Sonny Gray and obviously his strikeout to walk ratio really stands out. 2.24 strikeouts per walk. That made Sonny Gray 98th among pitchers who threw at least 100 innings. I think maybe it was 110 innings last year. And, you know, if you're trying to find a guy that maybe has gotten lucky, strikeout to walk ratio could be something that helps indicate. I don't know. But other guys who were in that range last year, Junior Guerra, Tanner Roark, Carlos Martinez, Jake Arrieta, Marco Estrada, all outside the top 80 in strikeout to walk ratio, minimum of 110 innings pitched.
Really, really fun fact about Sonny Gray, because like he's never really struck anybody out. He just walked more people last year. He threw more pitches in the strike zone than he had in either of the last 2 years.
Yeah, location, you look at the heat map of the location of his pitches, it was almost exactly the same as
but
the previous year.
The problem was in 2015 and 2014, opposing batters swung at about 29% of his pitches outside of the strike zone. Last year, that dropped down to below 26%. It kind of looks like maybe he just, I mean, Scott talked about earlier how they were jumping on him early. I think it's also possible that he wasn't really fooling anybody either.
Yeah. Okay, so to finish the show, quick emails. Brett in New Jersey. Dear Tori, Alshon, and Chance.
Are those Eagles receivers?
Yeah. Well, Chance Warmack is not a receiver, right? But they're
Eagles.
Yeah, new Eagles. Question. On Sunday morning, I have a 12-team mixed points league. It's a slow draft. I've never done a 12-team league before. I've done a lot of 10-team leagues. So what do I need to be aware of? I'm picking eighth. It's a 12-team league. Like, give this guy some advice in a 12-team league.
I think eighth is a very good place to pick. Maybe my favorite spot in the draft.
You have to pay. The deeper a league gets, the more you have to pay attention to position scarcity, I feel like. But we're used to doing 12-team leagues, and it hasn't been that big of an issue this year. I think it's a pretty mild adjustment. Obviously, you have to change your expectations for what your full roster is going to look like.
I would say picking eighth in a 12-team league. Your first pick's going to be a hitter. Your second pick will be a pitcher if it's Kershaw. If it's not Kershaw, you're probably taking a hitter in round two. Unless you play in one of those leagues where everybody prioritizes aces and you feel like you need to get one. I'm actually getting a lot of emails and tweets about that. So maybe you want to reach for like Bumgarner or Sale or something at that point. But if I have the eighth pick in a 12-team league and I'm drafting with you guys, you know, Scott Heath and the rest of the CBS group or other industry guys, I'm waiting until round three, maybe round four, and I'm probably looking at a guy like John Lester. And I'm taking three hitters with my first four picks, but still hopefully getting a top 10 or top 8 pitcher, maybe a Syndergaard, maybe a Lester, something like that. That's how I'd start my team. But also, like Scott said, pay attention to position depth.
I'm really hoping with this spot that I'm one of those third basemen's going to fall. Bryant, Donaldson, Machado, I'm going to take one of them. And then in the second round, I'm probably going to take Joey Votto.
Works for me. All right, we're going to end the show on that. You guys have yourselves a great weekend. Heath, enjoy the World Baseball Classic. That'll be fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to crush those Canadians.
No, we're going to respectfully compete against the Canadians, who all of our Canadian listeners.
I thought we were supposed to be proud of our country and cheering them on.
But we like Canada, you know? Like,
I like Canada a lot, but we're going to crush them in this baseball game.
All right, you know what? I'm all in. Canadian listeners.
Like you said, baseball game, which... Oh, Spaceball, baby's movie.
Yeah, another one. It's a tough contest. For Scott White and Heath Cummings, I'm Adam Azer. Fooled you. Later.